Song is so hard. I got to break it down. I say, in the morning, and you say,
when I
rise. Then I say, in the morning, and you say,
when I rise.
Theoretically, you ought to be singing in harmony. It's a Sweet Honey concert. It's supposed to sound good. And then, as if I haven't heard those first two lines, I do it again. In the morning,
when I rise,
well, I want to rise holy.
When I rise,
yeah, yeah, yeah. In the morning,
when I rise,
in the morning. I know some of you, your body is sort of trying to pull you out your seat, right? But you're in LA. You're not down in Georgia. And you know you're not supposed to be getting up. However,
get on up.
Get up.
You should actually get up. In the morning, oh, in the morning, oh, in the morning,
when I
rise, sanctified, when I rise holy. Oh, we didn't rehearse that. I will throw you some words. And you're supposed to know what to do with them. Like I'll say, water I sanctify. See, Sweet Honey is actually demonstrating. Water I
sanctify.
Water I
holy.
Water I want to rise. When I rise.
Good morning, everyone. We hope you're having a great start to your day. We hope we can get you juiced as we talk about art every other Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. We hope you've enjoyed Meg this morning and her eclectic musical selections. This is Tom Xenakis, and I'm with Sheila Blake, and we are the hosts of the Art as Experience radio show. Today we're going to talk, and we got a great start with Sweet Honey and the Rock, a local group that's quite famous in the area, and they were singing the great song In the Morning When I Arise, and I hope you're up to hear us this show.
Hi,
The Artist Experience is an hour-long radio show dedicated to looking at art. We hope that Tom and I can introduce our listeners to what we've been looking at and help you when you visit the exhibit, create in your soul, in your experience, your own work of art. We have an Artist Experience page on Facebook where we put images of the things we're talking about. It's also a place where we'd love our listeners to give us ideas and feedback, so please look at it while you're listening. You can stream the program at tacomaradio.org. Also, we're putting podcasts of this show on my website, sheilablake.com, and on artasexperience.com, and the podcast can be found on iTunes.
Well, I'm really excited to do this show in honor of Black History Month for the Artist Experience radio program. Today, we're going to look at the work of African-American artist Carol Walker, who was born in 1969. Currently, Carol Walker's work is being exhibited at the Smithsonian's American Art Museum on 8th and F Street, Northwest. The exhibition goes until March 11, 2018. So you have about 2 weeks to go see it, and you know we're so blessed in the D.C. metro area to have it. Of course, the museum is free and open to the public and very accessible at the Gallery Place Metro on the Yellow and Green Line.
So hooray for Black History Month. The Smithsonian American Museum of American Art is a terrific place. It's really terrific to be inspired by Black history. But first, you know what else is in the Portrait Gallery? The Obama portraits. So I have to tell you, they're absolutely wonderful. My neighbor, Mark Galesian, is a photographer for the Smithsonian. And coincidentally, I had taken some work over there to be photographed, and he showed me his photographs of the portraits. Sometimes I get really lucky. So after I saw them, I just couldn't wait to see them, lines or not. And the lines were short, as it turns out. They separated the lines out for the selfie crowd so that the people taking selfies can go ahead and take their selfies. But don't rely on the photographs. You've got to see the real thing. Amy Sherald's portrait of Michelle Obama is simply fabulous. It's both Michelle and an archetype, and it reaches out to you as only a painting can do. It's beautifully composed. Her white dress with the bold patterns, the skirt takes up the whole bottom of the painting and it rises up to her waist, and her long arms in tones of gray and up to her head. It's both a lightness and a monument. The elements of the painting, the folds of the dress, the pattern, which isn't repeated, but it's like geometrical shapes that falls like shards of color. And it seemed to have fallen on this white dress. It's elegant and commanding and friendly at the same time. This is a beautiful example of what painting can be and a photograph can't be. And then there's Kehinde Wiley's portrait of Barack, another kind of friendly. He's elegant and engaged in his somewhat shiny suit, sitting in an ornate wooden chair that may or may not be actually the Kenyan leader's chair. Barack is painted hyper-naturalistically. It's totally over the top. It glows. It's lit in a way that's actually beyond necessary. And the background is lush with leaves and flowers. Each flower is for the place that Obama lived. And it's like three-dimensional wallpaper, all the foliage, the way wallpaper's made out of color separations, sort of like paint by numbers. And that's something that would never show up in a photograph. So go see it. What great choices the Obamas and the artists made.
Well, yeah, since we decided to see the show, Sheila, about Carol Walker, I've been kind of racking my brain to figure out when I first saw her work. It had to be in the mid-1990s somewhere. But I remember being totally blown away by these powerful black and white silhouette cutout images. I remember saying, you know, this is like really one intelligent artist. Then I saw how young she was and how powerful her message was. And then I kind of just said, this woman is a genius. I went to the extreme immediately upon seeing her work. Her art is beautiful, it's emotional, it's historical significance, and it's personal. I feel that the personal connectedness to one's essence in their work is really important to link identity and humanity, and I underscore the word humanity. Sheila, when did you first become aware of Carol's work?
Well, the first time I saw it was in the New York Times in a picture of this sugar baby, it's called. It's a sphinx. It fills the warehouse of the Domino Sugar Factory in Brooklyn. And I was amazed at what it was, and I'm kicking myself that I didn't go see it. Because, of course, it dissolves. It's sugar.
Right.
But in order to talk about Kara Walker, I really had to go on the internet and find out whatever I could, and there's a lot there.
Absolutely.
My God. She is thoughtful. She's measured. She's articulate. She's free of jargon or predictability. Praise the internet. So Kara is true to herself entirely. She's amused. Just having done this show 2 weeks ago with Mae Stevens, the painter and poet, I'm beginning to believe that women have something else special, the ability to dig into their souls.
Gosh, Sheila, are you implying that men do not have the ability to dig into their souls? I hope you don't plan to turn this program into a gender bender. I don't know. We better kind of think about this. Before we get, let's get on to a bit about Kara Walker. I wanted to mention a bit, a funny tidbit about her name. Firstly, I'm totally into language, whether it's the etymology or origins of a word or linguistics. But I have to share this with our audience because the name Kara has interesting roots. In Romance languages, from, well, say, Italian or Spanish, it means dear, with an inference of beauty and goodness. But in the Turkic languages, such as Turkish, the root word means the color black. And her name is absolutely perfect for our artist. She's an African-American black woman. It's a very beautiful woman on many levels. And it's just my opinion. But go take a look if you must. That's a really wonderful thing about Kara Walker and her name. Additionally, I wanted to highlight something about Kara Walker, too. She was 27 years old when she won the ultra-prestigious John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation Genius Grant or Genius Award, and she was the youngest person to do so. I can't tell you how happy I was when I heard that news. Very deserving for a host of reasons that we'll share today. For a young artist, she has a huge bio. Sheila, why don't you get started to tell our listeners something about her biographical info?
Sure. Well, Kara Walker was born in 1969 in Stockton, California, which makes her 49 years old now. Her father was a painter and an art professor. He's a good painter. And since she was little, she would sit on her father's lap and draw. So she knew, she always knew she was going to be an artist. When she was 11, her family moved to Atlanta, Georgia, and her father took a position at Georgia State University. So now Atlanta was burned by Sherman's Union Army troops in his march to the sea, and that's where the Civil War ended. Many Atlantans returned to rebuild the city, and during the 1960s, Atlanta was a major organizing center for the civil rights movement with Dr. Martin Luther King, Ralph David Abernathy, Maynard Jackson, Andrew Young. Atlanta made a concerted effort not to be like Birmingham, but to become a progressive city. Atlanta is also all about the Civil War. It really still is. History is everywhere in the Deep South, where the Ku Klux Klan was still alive and well, and still is. Even now, it isn't even in the past. When I moved to North Carolina in 1964, it was like being hit with a soft, wet washcloth. Ooh. We rented a cabin on a tobacco tenant farm. I had just read Let Us Now Praise Famous Men, and I was enraptured by James Agee and Walker Evans' account of sharecroppers in Alabama in 1926. The owner of the land was touring us around, and he told us that he had the biggest tobacco allotment in Durham County. So I asked our new landlord if he had machinery, and he said, "No, we have niggers." Oh, welcome goodness. To the South. And Kara Walker was African-American, so these race issues had to have affected her, even though she says, and I'll quote her, "I went through my young adult life in Atlanta half-blind, let's say ignorant to some extent, because there it was. I was actually blinded by this melodrama, and the melodrama includes a kind of soft, focused view of racism and laws that are passed and were passed and continue to be shifted to affect some kind of change." She had a disturbed older brother who was evangelical and also violent and cruel while espousing something else. So that must have opened up her mind to the possibility of demons. Her art is very much about expressing what is in the mind. I think the power is that without any censorship, she's eliciting the whole range of emotions, what you wish for people to know and to feel. You know, she said, I'm going to quote her, "Americans' view of race is designed to avoid the confluence of disgust and desire and voluptuousness that are all wrapped up in this bizarre construct of racism. You know what black stands for in white America and what white stands for in white America are all loaded with our deepest psychological perversions and fears and longings." So then Kara got her BFA at the Atlanta College of Art and her MFA at the Rhode Island School of Design. In 1994, when Kara was 25, she showed her works of cut paper silhouettes that addressed historical references in these mural-sized works. Kara had disparaged the book, always Gone with the Wind, even though she'd never read it. And then when she decided to read it, she was amazed at how seductive it was, how caught up in it she was, and how grotesque it was at the same time. So she decided to do a work based on this novel. The work was all about the Old South, sex, slavery, politics. It's titled Gone, an historical romance of the Civil War as it occurred between dusky thighs of one young negress and her heart, which became her own interpretation of the characters in Gone with the Wind and the relationship of the authors to their characters.
Well, I'd like to interject here because those are the works that actually blew me away when I first saw them by Carol Walker. It's important to note that her appropriation of this cutout silhouette was another art form of yesteryear, and she has made it contemporary and unique in many poignant ways. This is extremely important to me as a contemporary artist myself. Sometimes artists use history and art historical models to communicate their message in a new and refreshing way. I have done this in my work, and it's sometimes called derivative work. In other words, art that is made of and derived from some other art of the past. Picasso and Modigliani appropriated the African mask and the abstraction of the features in African masks in their work, whether it was Cubist or otherwise in that Cubist era in the early 20th century. In the case of Kara Walker, she is brilliantly using the silhouette, another art form from the past, in an appropriate way to communicate her message. This kind of appropriation of another art form can be a dangerous tack, but definitely not in Kara Walker's case. She does it brilliantly and uniquely in a modern way. We'll talk about the silhouette a little bit later, but a little more about Kara Walker. Her work got more and more edgy and confrontational as she continued to work on these silhouette drawing styles and printmaking. And she even did a historical 360-degree work called a cyclorama, which many of us have probably seen at World's Fairs and things like that, Epcot and stuff, amusement parks. Her work took a theatrical turn, and there were darker themes of racism, gender, stereotypes, sex and abuse, brutality and whipping and lynching. So Kara Walker was rewriting American history from a female African-American perspective. In the early and mid-2000s, she began to explore light projections, video and film. She also worked on themes of current events like Hurricane Katrina, in the black communities of Louisiana. She explored viewer interactions of her work with public art, installations, and site-specific sculptures. 4 years ago, and Sheila alluded to this earlier, she began to create a monumental sculpture with massive works like the Sphinx, with a mammy look as opposed to a mummy look of Egypt. The work was of sugar and polystyrene exhibited in Brooklyn's Old Domino Sugar Factory. What about that piece again, Sheila?
Well, it's a perfect piece. It's essentially an enormous sugar-coated woman sphinx with African features, and it's beautiful, and it's brazen, and it's disturbing. She has an Aunt Jemima kerchief covering her hair, earrings, big breasts like headlights. It's titled A Subtlety, or The Marvelous Sugar Baby, and it's a densely layered statement that both accuses and pays tribute. It throws all possible interpretations and inescapable meanings at you. The history of slavery and the harvesting of sugarcane, Sphinx, woman fertility, evil eye, sexual enslavement. It's filled with outrage and guilt and shame and wonder. Around the Sphinx are these molasses-covered little black boys that are slowly, they're melting down. These boys symbolized welcome from the African Americans who collected them. You remember those hitching posts? Well, these are like the hitching posts. And the whole thing is a grand decaying structure fraught with a conflicted history. This is par for the course with Ms. Walker, and also best known for wall installations in which cavorting black paper silhouettes depict the often sexualized, variously depraved yet comedic interactions of discernibility within white slave owners and black slaves in the antebellum South, combining reality and metaphor with a great gift for caricature. These works demonstrate unequivocally that America's peculiar institution was degrading for all concerned. Carter Walker exposing, making visible what's taboo in our minds. And of course, there's a certain safety in confronting ourselves in an art gallery. But then you take these images home and you think and you react.
Well, Carol Walker also has a tremendous interest in music and has composed music, as she has done with lithograph prints on the theme of Porgy and Bess by Ira Gershwin and Du Bois Heywood. So let's listen to the song Porgy and Bess.
So, Cara's mother had the original cast recording of Porgy and Bess, and Cara tried to make sense of the words, "Your pa is rich and your ma is good looking, so hush, little baby, don't you cry." And is the baby Bess's baby, or is it a white baby being nursed by a black nursemaid? As many times as I've listened to those words, I never thought of it before. Or is the father a slave owner because he's rich, and is this his woman? Her work is both historical and contemporary. Because her work breaks the rules of political correctness and censorship, it's been embroiled in controversy in several arenas among artists, museums, and galleries. She's had to develop a pretty thick skin by opening her mind and using her superb intelligence to think everything through. She's very grounded. She's terrific at communicating the complexities of race, sex, and most of all, what it is to be human.
Yeah, that's really important, Sheila. Mm. Thank you.
Her drawing practice is what fuels her ideas. She does these tremendous drawings on big paper, and she uses it to get to the bottom of things she might not have otherwise been aware of. Part of the effect of the silhouettes is that they're open-ended. They're not filled in. They give you so much to think about without drawing a conclusion for you. There are many conclusions and many things to think about. There's a big question here, though. How to remain vital in the world? How does she give herself the right to make her work? Who's viewing it? She hopes for a wide audience. So, to conclude about Kara Walker's biography, she's had retrospectives in several major museums and collections worldwide. She's extremely prolific and is out there constantly producing fine works of art. Currently, she teaches at Columbia University and often is a guest artist or resident artist at other universities and art venues. She lives in New York City with her husband and child.
Her work in this exhibition that we're talking about today comes out of that silhouette model, and she uses the look brilliantly. A little bit of background about the silhouette, which fascinates me. The origins of this art come from writings from Pliny the Elder around 77 AD, writing in Latin about Corinthian Greek classical pottery, which describes the black figure style vases made by potters that were filled outlines of figures, but the bodies were black. These are ancient Greek vases of a variety of shapes that you see in museums of ancient Greek art, and the themes are usually of mythology. The name silhouette comes around 1759, from the name of the French finance minister, Étienne de Silhouette, at the time of the Seven Years' War, imposed upon economic sanctions on the French people. I find that very fascinating that the guy's name is an art form. And in this crisis of economy in France, it became known as a portrait that was done cheaply, as a solid shape form, and not just an outline. No one could afford the details of the portrait, so they just cut out a shape of the portrait. The silhouette was something that all the people could afford, and your portrait became a solid profile only. And this could be done in three ways. It could be done by black paint on an ivory surface or a white surface, or reversed on glass was another way to do it. Also, it could have been a hollow cutout on white paper glued on a black surface of a freehand cut figure placed on a white background. Kara uses many methods to convey this look of cutouts through painting, ink drawings, and lithographs and other printmaking techniques. Sheila, I've confessed many times in this program how much we learn in researching this program.
Oh my God.
I was totally in the dark, pun intended, about the origins of the silhouette. Another important aspect of the silhouette model is the relationships to the extreme. Black and white, that's so important in Kara Walker's message. This is about value contrast, value extremes. It's just perfect. Another aspect of these works, besides the contrast, is Kara Walker's use of space and spatial composition and design, which we're going to talk about a little bit. Okay, so we're going to take a little station break, and we thank WOWD for getting us to remind us that we're going to take a station break. But I want to, and we'll come back to the nitty-gritty details about this exhibition, but I wanted to play a song for you that is a quite volatile music hit from the 1970s. It was written by Neil Young, who is Canadian and not an American, responding to the racial tensions in the South at that time. That song, of course, is called Southern Man, and it was quite a controversial song, but appropriately, I found a fantastic version by Mary Clayton, a gospel singer, giving an emotional version to this rock and roll classic. Here's the cover song from 1971. Listen up to this amazing interpretation of Southern Man.
Welcome back. You're listening to WOWDLP Tacoma Park, 94.3 FM.
Well, we're going to get back to the exhibition by Carol Walker. And the interesting thing about this exhibition is that our artist juxtaposes the original prints from Harper's Pictorial History of the Civil War, which is annotated. This is a series of 15 prints taken from a two-volume anthology of the Civil War, which was first published in 1866. At the museum, you see the original works from the Harper's publication, and then you see how Carol Walker appropriates these images and makes them her own. She uses stencils to create a silhouette and changes the imagery and rewriting and illustrating a new history from the artist's point of view. Carol Walker is challenging the viewer to see the new history of these caricatures that depict race, gender, and historical stereotypes. It is a small exhibition, but it packs great visual punch, which is usually indicative in these high contrast works in black, whites, and grays. Carol Walker never minces visuals or words to express her misrepresentations of a misrepresented history in the antebellum South. In other words, what life was for blacks in oppression in the southern United States before the Civil War. Carol Walker has expressed about her work, and I quote, "The whole gamut of images of black people, whether by black people or not, are free reign in my mind." And I think that's a really empowering statement that she makes there. In that, not what artists are supposed to do. They want to be, artists are supposed to be creative and be free, no matter what the subject is.
So I'm going to talk a little bit about the Civil War. It was a war about slavery, but it was fought as a war between almost related white people. And that's the situation you see in the Harper's illustrations. The war was being fought about people that were not really being seen by anybody. Rising up from these images are their spirits, the unconscious fears of white people and of black people. Harper's Magazine began as Harper's New Monthly Magazine in June 1850, and 6 months later it had a circulation of 50,000. Harper's would hire artists to illustrate the text. What you are seeing in this show is enlarged lithographs of beautifully composed and detailed Civil War scenes. Some are in Maryland. Some of these scenes are in Maryland, in Virginia, in Harper's Ferry. And these dark figures are laid on top, disrupting the scenes. Sometimes the mangled and grotesque figures go over the boundaries of the anthology's original pictures, and they expand into the margins and into the space of real life. Walker's prints are presented alongside a selection of the original Harper's images on which they are based. Seen together, they let you in on Walker's artistic process and her approach to history as an always fraught, always contested narrative. It's as if she overlaid history with the ghosts who are cavorting and mischievously and malevolently disrupting the white man's glorified history. Walker's work exposes a dark period of repression and racism in America's past. Particularly during the Civil War, African Americans were portrayed as vicious and dehumanizing caricatures. I was just remembering watching the Olympics, how when I was a kid, we played war games against the Japs. We were taught that people of a different color skin weren't like us. I was looking at a newspaper, a picture of a mother. She was wailing with holding her dead child, and my mother said, "They don't have the same feelings about death that we do." I think she really believed that. I thought a lot about that, though. You can see that these caricatures are dehumanizing. They take away what humanity is.
Well, thank you for sharing that, Sheila. Well, another aspect of these works, besides the visual contrast, is the use of space and spatial composition in design. Our artist, Kara Walker, gives us a lesson in compositional design concepts in these works that are very different from the original Harper's works. Many of the works in the exhibition have a big silhouette of a black face in the middle of the works, and sometimes with a smaller image cut out of gray and white in the middle of that. This design concept is called hieratic composition. What the artist does, he puts a big black contrasting image in the middle of a space of art. Your eye cannot get around the significance of that mark. It's a case of the silhouette being central and large in the composition. This is an old visual device that you see in depictions of the Bible narratives when most of the population could not read the Bible. Thus, she has a graphic emphasis on the subject that is easy to see and easy to digest to tell a story. Here in Kara Walker's works, the central silhouette imagery takes over the composition of what are a lot of other smaller images behind it. The imagery of a black man or woman comes to the forefront of the composition, which now serves as the emphasis. In other words, that black silhouette is much more important than what's going on in the background. This is just one compositional device that Kara Walker uses so brilliantly in her works.
And so many of the works have something called an open composition, where the imagery goes beyond the margins, whether they be entire images or body parts exploding off the page. The traditional way of composing is the way we've talked about, like in Vermeer. It's like a theater that you, the viewer, are standing in front of. Everything is composed for a single viewpoint using perspective and value, contrast, and focus. The closer things are to you, the larger they are, the greater the contrast, the finer the detail. You know when you enter the painting and where your eye moves about in space. Then there's a different way of composing, cropping, as though you're using the camera to frame and remove the outer parts of an image to improve the composition, accentuate the subject matter, or the abstraction by emphasizing the flatness of the shapes. There's a nice use of this in Michelle Obama's portrait, the flat shapes of the blue background against the conical figure. Philip Perlstein and Al Held were masters of cropping. It can be a powerful tool as it extends the image past the boundaries of the canvas. Kara uses the images like Balinese shadow puppets, like a moving play of shadows on a screen. Sometimes they actually seem to be moving, or they're read as moving, and sometimes they're static. Sometimes she seems to have made a decision to not use negative space, which is negative space is definitely static. She uses her images to tell a story. They're walking on the ground, flying from the sky, sometimes coming in from outside the boundaries of the picture. My own eye, though, in seeing these black and white shapes, is fighting for a more conscious use of negative space.
And that visual emphasis is created by using these images of dismembering, amputations, and disfigurement in her work. Body parts are flying off the pictures. There's arms. There's all kinds of other parts, body parts that are on the edge of the margins. They're very startling, and it conjures up the physical, emotional, and psychological, and spiritual dismembering of the family, even the race, the individual person, and the spirit of these blacks living in the South under slavery, servitude, and oppression. Walker is rewriting history in a very graphic way. Whose history for whom? What about our history made visual?
Well, I can't emphasize what you said enough. This is about who owns history. Repression is the largest idea, as we're finding out now in the opposing accounts on the news of what's going on. Who's the teller? Who is listening? In one sense, these ghosts, these images come alive to tell their story, but their story is not simple. It's the whole range of human nature. And who's right it is to make this work? Kara is true to herself. In this exhibition, one of the disrupted images is of a vast landscape seen from Fort Henry here in Maryland, with the victorious gunboats steaming up the river. But dead center, half of it is obliterated by a black mountain, and inside the mountain is the silhouette of a black boy crawling through a tunnel. In another work, there are crowds of people running, waving their hats to greet the federal gunboats. And in front is a silhouette of a woman crawling, desperate to get away. In the original picture, there's a black nanny carrying a white baby and a black baby who's crawling away from the crowd alone. So Kara gives him, in this silhouette, his mammy to catch up with. This is partly storytelling, but there's no clear narrative between the battles and the superimposed figures, which are cryptic, and it's not always easy to tell what they are doing there. There's a terrific piece of a parade on the occupation of Alexandria, and that's right here in Virginia. The ranks of soldiers with the spectators waving on and the Union flag. The figures in the foreground are themselves in the actual print, silhouetted against the light of the parade route. And then over to the right, against the river, is a silhouette of a black woman with a baby on her back, kneeling, her mouth open, shaking her fist. It's particularly subtle because the black woman is integrated into this scene.
Well, I'd also like to address the images of mobs, people fleeing, people being chased, with the visual sense of inequality in numbers and the power of how suddenly the image is reversed. And the emphasis now wasn't on the one image. There's an irony in this, that visually there are many people in the imagery, but Kara Walker superimposes the big silhouetted image in these mob scenes, suddenly giving the image of a black person's face the power in the composition. But that was really never the reality in Harper's view. What about these beings fleeing a scene?
Sure. Well, there's a scene of Banks' army leaving Simport. The army looks to be very organized, very good shape. There's a riverboat on the river with beautiful trees that dwarf the lines of soldiers, and those soldiers reach back as far as the eye can see, and then at the very front is a silhouette of a slave dragging a long sack, maybe sowing seeds, getting ready to pick cotton, walking right out of the scene. Or the exodus of Confederates from Atlanta. The center is filled with the silhouette of a child's head, a lovely image that goes way past the original picture. And within that, so now it is like a window through that head, is the silhouette of a boy laughing. So you can see part of the scene of the whites and the slaves waiting to find out how to leave with their belongings, the horse and wagon. You'll love the detail. Strangely, I couldn't find out who the artist or artists were of the original etchings, and they're fabulous. I think it takes courage to mess with these images and add to them the way Kara did, because the originals really are works of art.
And that's the thing about this exhibition. I see Kara Walker's work and using these original Harper images. I actually, you know, think they're totally original in themselves. And that's the power of and the wonder in her work. So what about this history? It's going always back to history.
Well, we keep saying it. Where does it, who owns history? Does Fox News own history? Does NPR own
right,
history?
Right.
Who is telling it? Whose right it is to make this work? This show, more than any other we've done, and this is our 40th show, has given me more to respond to, more to think about than anything else we've done. This has really reached me deeply.
Well, I agree, Sheila. Sometimes the power of art comes in the question that art raises, and it certainly does in the case of Kara Walker. There's a great risk in this work, and our artist today has an intelligence and a gumption to visually attack the past, the present, and the future with the questions and statements about who we are and what are we doing with history. Whether you're an artist or an art historian or someone that appreciates history, in this case, the history of the antebellum South, this exhibition is very important and timely. Kara Walker presents her interpretation of a history of race, whether black or white. She leaves a new narrative to an old story that historically was depicted as genteel, sanitized, and sterilized for an audience that was actually homogenized, white people seeing history in their own way. Of course, not every white person believed in that history was correct, but it was a mainstream view of the antebellum South portrayed by white historians, white artists, and white illustrators for a white audience. Let us not forget, I hate to be trite, but history repeats itself. Humanity does not work in a vacuum. The artists certainly do. Artists certainly do not, and they never have. And Kara Walker presents a visual challenge to us to confront the themes of race, gender, inequality, and brutality. She sheds light on a sensitive, unresolved narrative that is current and important. In celebration of Black History Month, we hope you've enjoyed the show.
I have one thing that I want to add. There's a musician. She is an instrumentalist, a fabulous singer. Her name is Rhiannon Giddens. And if you know about her, if you don't, figure it out. We so fortunately went to see her at the Lincoln Theater last spring. And her work is also on the same topics of slavery. And she uses songs and folk songs and also her own songs. And she is an amazing performer. She has as much power as Kara Walker. So I thought, these two women, if they don't know each other, they better figure this out because they are sisters. And so I looked up to see in the internet, and I saw that Rhiannon Giddens in 2017 received a MacArthur Genius Grant.
Wow, wonderful.
Wonderful. So
they're like soulmates.
They are soulmates. They definitely are.
Well, Sheila, why don't you tell our listeners about some upcoming programs?
Okay, well, Tom and I would like to do a show on the maladies of artists, a program about artists' lives making art in war and disease and health crises that ended their creative journeys and cut their lives short, and in some cases, very short. There's a lot of these artists.
Is that your idea, Sheila, about the maladies of artists? That's going to be like a 5-part show. This is going to be a heavy one. Do we have room for a box of Kleenex in the studio? We'll need to make some room. But additionally, we want to continue our program about politics and art because things are really heating up here in D.C. All you have to do is turn on the radio, and we hope you're turning on WOWDLP Tacoma Park. I'd like to close the show with an incredible pop song that came out by two great artists in Stevie Wonder and Paul McCartney. When I saw the video of the song Ebony and Ivory, I was absolutely floored because it was about theatrical silhouettes, much like we've been talking about this hour in Carol Walker's work. It's a fitting end to the program with an emotional song about reconciliation. It's timely, and we need to take heed from the message both of Carol Walker's work and the message by the powerful, great artists of Stevie Wonder and Paul McCartney. Until next time, see art in everything you do, experience the visual. Have a great day, everyone. Thank you.
What we need to survive together.